Welcome to The Partial Historians.
We explore all the details of ancient Rome.
Everything from the political scandals, the love affairs, the battles waged, and when citizens turn against each other. I'm Dr. Rad.
And I'm Dr. G. We consider Rome as the Romans saw it, by reading different authors from the ancient past and comparing their stories.
Join us as we trace the journey of Rome from the founding of the city. Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of The Partial Historians. I am one of your hosts, Dr. Rad.
And I am Dr. G, and we are following the history of Rome from the founding of the city.
Boy, are we. And you know what? We're getting so close to 100 years of the Republic.
Maybe we should do a special episode, a 100-year recap on the early Republic.
Totally doable. It's only taken us, what, 7 years to get here?
It's going to be fine. Yeah. Stay tuned. Watch this space.
Yeah. So, Dr. G, in our grand narrative of Rome's history, last episode, we were up to 423 BCE, and it was actually kind of a memorable year.
Yeah, some things happened, particularly with Sempronius Atratinus, who was one of the consuls for that year.
He was roped into waging a military campaign, and it didn't go so well for him against the Volscians, Dr. G.
And he seems to have come into a bit of a cropper with the cavalry in some regard. Maybe not paying attention to where they are, maybe getting cut off from them.
Yep.
And anyway, one of the military tribunes saves the day.
One of the cavalry decuriones.
I love a good decurio.
Yeah. He is the savior of the day. And it really looked for a second there like Rome was going to be slaughtered. And instead, Tempanius, very unusual name, managed to turn the tide at least to the extent that it was a draw.
That it was safe to run away.
fight again another day, as they like to say. So, and then, of course, when they got back, everyone was like, what happened out there? And they tried to rope Tempanius into testifying against Sempronius for, like, his gross incompetence. But he refused, Dr. G. Man of honor through and through.
And I think what we're going to see as a bit of foreshadowing for what's coming up is some of the fallout from 423 coming up.
Yeah, I don't think the tribunes of the plebs are going to like walk away from such a ripe case of patrician incompetence.
How could they? Stand firm.
Exactly.
Tribunes of the plebs, stand firm.
Yeah. So with that under our belts, let's dive in to 422 BCE.
What a time to be alive for a Roman.
Is it though? Do you have any source material?
How dare you? I mean, it's been thin on the ground for a while. Let's just say that the Fasti Capitolini has a little bit of information.
Okay.
I have a little excerpt from Valerius Maximus, which might be exactly the same excerpt as I had for the previous year.
I was going to say.
Diodorus Siculus is missing and Dionysius of Halicarnassus. Who can say? Who can say?
Siculus is missing now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know what? I'm starting to think that these sources aren't missing. You're just careless.
I've decided to no longer prep for episodes. I'm just rocking up.
All right. Well, with that in mind, shall we perhaps just start with the magistrates and then I will give you what Livy has to offer.
Yeah, yeah. I'm super excited. So what I've tried to do to compensate for my absolute lack of source material is, first of all, consult Broughton, who has the list of who's in what position across the year that we even have any idea about.
Raunchy.
Me and Broughton, I mean, it might be 1950, but I'm happy. And from that point onwards, I might just interject every now and then with a little bit of tidbit about names.
I love it.
That might be
it.
All I've
no,
got.
No, look, you know my Latin is subpar.
Ooh.
So let's do it.
All right. So we've got some military tribunes with consular power.
Okay.
Sometimes you might hear of these listeners as referred to as consular tribunes. Mm. That's for fine. Those two titles are interchangeable.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Lucius Manlius Capitolinus.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We've got Quintus Antonius Merenda.
Ooh.
And Lucius Papirius Mugellanus.
You got my hopes up for a second there, Dr. G, when you said that we had military tribunes with consular power, and yet I feel like every name on that list is patrician.
Yes.
Yeah.
Although Antonius is a plebeian name, so Quintus Antonius Merenda.
Mm.
Antonius is a plebeian gens.
Right.
But there is like problems with this because our literary sources, unreliable though they may be and controversial for their retrojections into the past, et cetera, all the usual caveats. the feeling from the ground from those writers looking back at this period is that the first plebeian tribune with consular power doesn't get elected until 400
exactly.
BCE.
Exactly.
So and we're a little ways away from that at the moment.
Yeah.
So who is this Antonius? I don't know.
Mm. I wonder if he's a distant relative of Mark Antony.
Surely. Does he have the nose? Let's check for the nose.
Indeed.
So they're our military tribunes.
Yeah.
Then we've got a nice little list of tribunes of the plebs.
I thought you might say this.
Yeah, which is pretty exciting. We've got a guy called Tiberius Antistus.
Mm-hmm.
So we're expecting plebeian names in this section.
For sure.
Marcus Acellius,
mm-hmm.
Tiberius Spurillus.
Sounds like a pastor.
Or Spurillus.
Less like a pastor.
And a name that may be familiar to you, Sextus Tempanius.
Well, of course. I mean, you know, he was the hero of the previous year. Of course he's going to wind up being a tribune of the plebs.
The hero of the previous year, now in charge on a political front, not a military front.
There is a real pattern with these plebeians that rise to the top in our sources, and that is they have this moment in the sun, and they always end up being a tribune afterwards.
Well, they cross over,
yeah.
It's the classic crossover. It's the... What would be the modern equivalent? The influencer to Twitch host? I don't know.
Nice.
I'm not sure.
I didn't even know what half those words meant, so good job.
I'm not going to pretend I understand any more than what I just said. There are other notables for this year.
Yes.
Obviously, Gaius Sempronius Atratinus, consul of the previous year, is going to have a bit of a feature.
Uh-huh.
And somebody called Lucius Hortensius.
Mm.
And you may think to yourself... Well, you might know what's going on in the narrative. I've got no idea what's going on with Hortensius in the narrative. But apparently this guy is also a plebeian, or at least that's what the name suggests.
It does, it does.
But I'll go into the etymology of that later.
Good, good, because I also have something to say about that name. Okay, so the narrative of all of this. Whilst the consuls are away, the plebeians decide to elect this array of tribunes according to Livy. So this is where we get our Tempanius, our Acellius, our Antistius, and our Spurillius. Okay. Now, all of these men, not just Tempanius, had allegedly been chosen to lead the cavalry when they had been forced to dismount from their horses and therefore, quite frankly, become infantry. Against the Volscians.
So all of these tribunes of the plebs are former cavalry
guys,
leaders.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, the horsemen.
Oh, boy.
In fact...
The four horsemen.
I was going to say, the four horsemen.
Is there an apocalypse coming to Rome?
It was almost an apocalypse, let's be honest. So I have actually looked into this a little bit, and the commentary that I'm consulting, Ogilvy, says that this is such a weird detail for Livy to have included. It must be true.
So strange.
Yeah. I think he's referring to the whole idea of obviously them, you know, dismounting and being chosen to lead in some capacity. And that would make sense because Tempanius couldn't possibly, I don't think, have been the only person who was in charge of the cavalry that particular day.
Well, he's the only one who turns up in the story.
Until this moment, Dr. G. And he was clearly surrounded by people. Anyway, the Senate sensed... because they've so got their finger on the pulse of the people. But there's a negativity in Rome after the whole Sempronius affair.
The vibes are off.
The vibes are off. And so they're like, you know what? Let's just not have consuls. It'll make them feel better.
I mean, we'll just put patricians in power, but not consular power.
Yeah, that would be an insult too great. Salt, wound, bad idea. So they decide instead on military tribunes with consular powers, and it's thus that we get the names that you mentioned earlier, some of which are very familiar, like Capitolinus.
Capitolinus is a pretty familiar name. We've come across those a few times. This is the first time I think we've come across an Antonius Miranda.
Agreed. That is a weird name.
But Lucius Papirius Mugellanus, he was consul in 427.
Totally. Yeah.
And seems to have been related to a guy who was consul in 443, another Papirius.
Yeah, we've heard the name Papirius. We've definitely heard Mugellanus before.
Yeah. Yeah. So there is also a generational legacy here where it's like there is a flow through of patricians from certain families coming into power, apparently, according to our sources.
Yeah. And therefore, this makes it an entirely meaningless gesture on behalf of the Senate.
We put all our friends into power to keep you happy. Are you happy?
We'll just label it differently. Anyway, so at the start of the year, one of the tribunes of the plebs who was not mentioned as being part of the Four Horsemen gang, Lucius Hortensius, decides he's going to go after Gaius Sempronius, the idiot of the previous year who'd been such a terrible commander. Ooh. Take the floor, Dr. G.
So Lucius Hortensius is also a tribune of the plebs.
He is, but he's not from the original gang.
Okay, yeah. So he's not one of these four horsemen.
He is not.
And this may explain why he's doing the prosecution, because he represents a slightly different political faction, maybe.
Oh, he definitely does. Like, there's a whole narrative around this, but I thought you might want to say something about his name.
I do.
Yeah.
So the temptation is always to be like, Hortensius, it must come from hortus. Garden.
Okay.
A beautiful Latin word.
Didn't even occur to me because my Latin is so poor.
But that is apparently not where this name comes from.
Okay.
It is thought to come from an ancient Roman town called Hortense or Hortensies.
Okay. Yeah.
That is somewhere in central Italy, but sadly, location unconfirmed.
Typical. Well, I have a little bit more to add to that, which is that although the name Hortensius probably sounds very familiar to you and I, because this family becomes quite well known in the later Republic.
This family will make a reappearance. This particular Hortensius seems to be the earliest mention of a Hortensius that we get in our sources, but scholarship generally discounts this guy as being real.
I was going to say, I hate to say it. I know how you feel when I say that these people aren't real. It starts to make reality, you know, bend. But yeah, there is no other Hortensius mentioned in the sources for hundreds of years.
Yeah. So scholars tend to err on the side of caution here and be like, this guy might not be real.
Well, I mean, especially because we know what the Romans are like with their names.
Well, yes. Yeah. So the Romans have this idea, much like in the way that they assume people's characters based on their appearance, they also assume character based on family.
Yes.
So there's this idea that there's hereditary elements of personality that come through. So the acts of this guy might be just a retrojection of the sorts of things that Hortensii are thought to do later on.
Yes, well, the interesting thing is there will eventually be a connection between the Sempronii and the Hortensii in the later Republic. So it's possible that the reason this particular name has been selected is because there's this interesting thing happening with
the Sempronii. You're telling me this is all just foreshadowing.
foreshadowing. Of like, four centuries. Okay, so what basically ends up happening in Livy's account is that the four horsemen of the Apocalypse, I can't stop it, beg Hortensius not to persecute Sempronius.
He's our man. We love him. Yeah, like, he's just doing his best. It was a really tough thing. You weren't there on the battlefield. You didn't see how this was going down. How dare you step in? No, he's not incompetent. He tried his best. It was difficult circumstances. And we know he didn't prepare before the battle, but it's not his fault.
That's exactly what they say. Literally, word for word. They're like, it's just bad luck. anybody could have bad luck on a battlefield. It's a battlefield, man. You weren't there. You didn't see.
The plan is only as good as the first moment of combat.
Yeah.
Shh, we didn't have a plan.
We were fighting at midnight. I mean, sure, by then it had all gone to hell, but come on.
You can't even see what you're doing under those conditions.
It was black as night. The enemy just appeared out of nowhere, man. Anyway, Hortensius refuses to give way. He's like, nah, man, I don't believe any of it. I think you're just worried about the appearance of all of this. You're just thinking about the optics.
Oh, well, these guys are definitely thinking about the optics. This is where Valerius Maximus ends up going.
Okay, tell me about the optics.
The optics are that these four other tribunes of the plebs, not Hortensius, get together and they're like, oh no, if you're going to persecute and prosecute Sempronius,
yeah,
we are going to turn up every day at the rostra in mourning. Wearing mourning garb.
Yes, yes.
As a intense performative display of loyalty for the man who was and shall always be our commander.
Exactly. I mean, the loyalty is bizarre because I swear there's like...
It did sound like they really lost that battle and it was just a nightmare.
There is no mention of any personal connection between these men before this particular battle.
Look, just because we don't know about it doesn't mean it wasn't there.
This is true, but also, wouldn't you mention it if it was? Anyway, Sempronius is clearly counting on the other tribunes using their veto to stop anything bad from happening to him. However, Hortensius calls him out. You're hiding behind the tribunes. How dare you? What kind of ex-consul are you anyway? Hortensius also turns to the four horsemen and says, so what are you going to do? What are you going to do if I continue after Sempronius, huh? You just going to undermine the whole idea of the tribunate? How's that going to work out for you? And all the other Roman people, if you guys undermine this position that we all hold as tribune of the plebs, seems like you're going to be stripping the people of their rights. Am I right?
I don't know if this feels logical to me, but please continue.
Well, the tribunes say, as if we certainly did not intend to overrule whatever the people decide. They're allowed to vote on things. However, and this is where your story comes in, if you're going to ignore our pleas for Sempronius's well-being, then we are just going to dress in mourning and as like a show of solidarity, as he's like our dad.
Oh, wow.
Because he was our commander.
Oh no. Mixing up filial piety with the command structure of the military forces. This is getting messy.
I know. It's really sickening. Now, Hortensius is convinced by this. Yeah. He's like, okay. Put the mourning away. We don't need to get unpleasant.
Let's not get emotional about it.
Exactly. We don't need to get fabric involved. Sempronius is free to go. I'm not going to touch him. Because if you guys are so dedicated to him, then he must be worth it. And I was wrong the whole time.
The whole thing feels implausible. What kind of story is this?
I know. The end note is the best part because everyone is for once thrilled with the Tribune of the Plebs. All of them. They're like, you know what? You guys were like super loyal and dedicated and you, Hortensius, showed yourself to be flexible, reasonable, logical. I don't think I've ever had such a high rating. It's like 5 stars across the board for all of the tributes.
You guys haven't agreed at all, but you got there in the end.
Yeah.
Good job.
Yeah. Now, this is where things get really weird in Livy's account because it's like most people agree that he abruptly switches his source material, like the main source that he's consulting, one of these earlier sources. But the one thing that kind of does stay similar all throughout this little next period is that it seems that maybe Livy is dwelling on a theme of moderatio. And this would be a good moment to flag that, obviously, because everyone's being well, reasonably reasonable, you know, as far as roads go.
I don't think our four horsemen are necessarily demonstrating any moderatio. Like, all they've done is step up each time.
That's true, increase the pressure.
Yeah, and gone, well, if you're going to do that, I'm going to do this.
I guess the...
But Hortensius has apparently shown some moderatio.
Yeah, I don't know that everybody is, as you say. But I guess you could say that the other tribunes kind of are, in the sense that they don't use their veto. They're like, we'll make this a personal show of solidarity. Mm. A private public protest, if you will. Yes. Anyway, now this is where it becomes like an abrupt shift, because all of a sudden, out of nowhere, we've got this mention of the Aquians coming in to claim some sort of victory over the Volscians. It seems really weird.
Oh, so yeah. when the Romans ran away,
the Aquians want a piece of that action.
Aquians were there being like, well, I see the Volscii are not quite ready.
Well, I don't even know if it's like in a fresh combat or if it's actually what just happened.
I was going to say, wasn't there some kind of, I didn't know the Aquians were involved, but it seems like maybe they inserted themselves when the opportunity arose.
I think they did. But also, I think Livy's also just like, really quickly changed horses, and it doesn't have the nice flow that I've come to expect from Livy's narrative.
Maybe, yeah. It sounds like Livy might be struggling. Mm.
Indeed. And that's where he ends the year, which is why it's even stranger.
P.S. The Aquians. The end.
That's basically what it reads like. He's like, Aquians. And we're like, wait, what? Have we talked about the Aquians any time recently?
Yeah, nothing in any of the material that I've been able to scrounge together in preparation has mentioned the Aquians.
Exactly. And so without further ado, Dr. G, that means that I am ricocheting into 421 BCE.
Oh, okay. Well, before we head into that direction, I'll give you some lowdown on the name Acellius. So we've got these tribune of the plebs. One of them is Marcus Acellius.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is the only one for which there is more history attested for the family name.
Okay.
So, but not until the 2nd century CE.
Once again, we've got these later names.
Yeah. And I think this is really interesting because this is a family that crops up into prominence well after the source material that even we're consulting.
Right.
But this family is hanging around, but it seems that there are long threads that go back quite a long way for that particular gens.
Okay.
And that's it. That's my other little tidbit of detail.
Love it.
And I'm ready to move on.
I would not have known that without you. And that's the whole point of this exercise. All right. So 421 BCE, we're back to consuls, I'm afraid.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Look, my source material. I'm glad you asked.
I didn't. I just assumed.
Dino Aristiculus. Still missing.
Right, yep.
Dionys of Halicarnassus. Missing.
Yep.
I've got a little bit of Festus.
Yes, there is a little bit of Festus that is relevant here, but I'll let you take that.
And I've also got a little bit of Tacitus as Annals.
Yes, I think I know where you're coming, but again, I'm not going to trigger any shows for that. I'm going to let you take that. But do you want to tell us the names of the consuls for this year?
All right, there's some controversy.
Okay.
So it's Gnaeus or Numerius.
That is what Livy prefers.
Yeah, but nobody else prefers that, really. So, but we'll come to that.
Well, everyone else has disappeared, so I think they can take a flying leap.
As a crane omen, Numerius is a little bit unusual.
It is very unusual. I'll give you that.
So, Gnaeus or Numerius, Fabius.
Ah, fabulous Fabian.
Vibulanus.
Definitely heard this name.
Yeah. The Fabii, well, one of our favourite genses at this point in time.
Yeah. Well attested.
Well attested.
Yeah.
Dramatically almost dead. And then we also have Titus Quintius Capitolinus Barbatus.
Definitely a name we recognise.
Sounds familiar.
I mean, for heaven's sakes, there's just the previous year we were talking about a Capitolinus, weren't we?
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, the beady ones.
Yeah, well, I particularly like the way that Livy introduces this guy to me, because he says the consuls are Numerius Fabius Vibulanus and Titus Quintius Capitolinus, the son of Capitolinus. And I was like, thanks so much for clearing that up, Livy. Super clear now who this guy is and who he's related to.
Nothing quite like those details to really lock you into the narrative.
I know. Now, of course, we start in this random place that we finish, where by lot, Fabius is chosen to be the commander against the Aquians. what?
Well, fair enough.
Yeah, like, what is happening? But nothing is really achieved, so it's not a glorious battle, because what happens is that Fabius goes off to war with the Aquians. The Aquians, having come in, maybe claiming someone else's victory, I don't know what's going on there, they also give a very half-hearted effort against the Romans, and so the Romans just super easily manage to triumph over them. It's a completely shameful defeat from the Aquians, who have to retreat, and therefore Fabius is left with nothing to brag about. So
No triumph.
But he does get an ovatio, or an ovation, because he had somewhat helped to waft away the stench of Sempronius' behaviour on the battlefield.
You didn't lose, and that was good.
Yeah, and it wasn't, you know, disastrous and shameful. We okay. like that.
Yeah.
More of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ovatio is like a lesser triumph.
Yeah, I mean, like, to be honest, it sounds like more than I feel like he deserves.
Yeah, it is still quite a substantial celebration, but the commander walks through the city as part of the procession rather than being in a chariot.
Yes, obviously. Walking in Roman
walking
sandals.
Is not as prestigious.
No, it's really not. So it's a bit of a win, but I think everyone feels very ambivalent about this because everyone ended up expecting more from the Aquians, although we certainly didn't because the Aquians seem to be randomly placed. So
they do.
Yeah, it just seems like such a non-affair. But then, Dr. G... The yes. peace was shattered with unexpected and serious quarrels between the plebeians and the patricians. And to that I say, Livy, really? You don't need to be Cassandra to see this one coming.
I was like, unexpected? Surprising?
I know. I'm like, surely this is the most predictable thing in the history of the world.
It has been happening for a while, according even to Livy.
Yeah. And of course, it could only happen over a truly hot button issue, which is the doubling of the quaestors.
I wondered where this was going. I was like, is land allotment back on the agenda? No. Okay, wait, I have a source for this.
Excellent. Wait, before you go into it, are you going to tell us what quaestors are to begin with? Because I thought we might need to remind people. It's been a while since we mentioned them.
I'm not sure that I am going to. I mean, it's tricky. Quaestors end up being in charge of things. Like, what, the treasury?
Yeah, like, what they end up being in charge of, much like aediles, is very little, to like, related to what they do now.
Yeah.
They are mentioned, actually, all the way back in the regal period, as being in charge of helping out with cases of parasitium, so where a family member has killed a family member.
Yeah, see, I'm glad you're here, because it's like, of all of the things I decided to look up, looking up what the quaestors did in the early Republic was not one of them.
Look, typically, of all the magistracies of this time period, we don't really know what they do. But because they actually predate
Republic, have a quasi-legal function.
Yeah. So. And they are mentioned in the 12 tables. They are mentioned as the quaestores paradici. No, I can't tell you.
Paracidium.
Paracidia. Paracidia. The quaestores paracidia. I don't know why I'm saying it in Italian.
Every time an Italian dies.
I just had to do it.
I enjoyed it. So the quaestors. So yeah, we get Tacitus weirdly as a source for this. This is a guy that's writing in the like early 2nd century and late 1st century CE. So he's like, you know, a while away even from Livy, over a century later.
Definitely.
And he talks about the quaestors going back to Brutus in 509 BC.
Yes.
But also notes that two are added to take care of things at Rome in 421 BCE. So the idea is that they were supposed to accompany the military chest. So that's Tacitus's read. So that's a really interesting sort of progression for where the quaestorship is going to maybe end up.
Exactly, treasury, money.
Yeah, treasury and money. Yeah, yeah. And so that's where Tacitus is. And he's like, well, he assumes that in this very early period of the Republic that they had two to look after the war booty, essentially. Like, like the really precious stuff that's picked up in the battlefield, the quaestors are in charge of, like, managing that and the security around that.
Yeah.
And then they decide in this moment that they need two more in Rome itself.
Yes.
I don't know who's been stealing the booty to suggest that that might be necessary.
It's not actually that per se. Basically, how this all comes about is that the consuls say, it's too much paperwork. And you know what? I'm sick of hearing the consuls complain about that. This has been like, what?
Red tape, man. Red tape. All I want to do is go out and kill people with an army. Come on. Come on. Come on.
I know.
Round up, round up, round up.
It's like every job has a glamorous side and a not so glamorous side, guys. But anyway.
Guys, I need a PA.
Oh, they completely say that. They say, look, there's a lot of conflict going on. We're being drowned in admin.
Between the levy.
Yeah.
Between having to, like, clean my own leather. Oh, it's a nightmare, I tell you what.
I know. I mean, quite frankly, look at Sempronius. Why didn't he prepare? Too busy with admin.
I just couldn't get through the emails. The backlog was shocking.
It was choking me. So they want two more quaestors because they just can't cope. There's just too many wars going on. And the Senate are like, totally, completely reasonable. Of course. Four sounds like the number that we need. Now, the tribunes, of course, get wind of this. And they say, whoa, whoa, whoa. Look, while we're adding two quaestors, I mean, that would make a total of four. Why don't we say that 50% have to be plebeians? Because traditionally, quaestors have always been patricians.
Mmm. Well, cat amongst the pigeons right there.
Well, it seems like a fairly simple request. But the consuls and the Senate, of course, have their default reaction of, I would rather die than see that happen. And they put up a huge fight. Absolutely refuse. They're like, no way, no how. However, finally, they decide to make a compromise. They're going to apply the same rule that they used for military tribunes with consular power, which is that the people can elect whoever they want. Maybe to be patricians, maybe to be plebeians. Good luck. That compromise is rejected.
Well, fair enough. Yeah. I mean, we've yet to see any evidence of some real plebeians inside the military tribunate with consular power.
Precisely. So they decide we're just going to have to let go of the whole idea of having more quaestors. We'd rather, like, neither of us are going to have any more quaestors because we can't agree where they're coming from.
So they're not going to increase them.
No. They're like, you know what?
We'll just stick with two.
Let's just drop it.
Two is fine.
Yeah.
Consuls are like, I'll do my paperwork.
Yeah.
I hate emails. Whatever.
Yeah. However, the Tribune of the Plebs is less keen to kind of let this all go. And they're like, you know what? All of this has reinvigorated me, refreshed me. And so I'm now going to pursue all these other dangerous and revolutionary ideas that tribunes typically do, such as pushing for an agrarian law.
Wow, wow.
Yeah. The Senate are like, whoa, how did this happen? We were just talking about, like, trying to reduce our admin, and now we're back at an agrarian law?
All we said was, if you're going to have more quaestors, we want two of them to be us. Not going to give it to us? Fine. I want all of the public land reallotment to be fixed up yesterday.
Exactly. So the Senate are like, okay, well, clearly we can't risk having military tribunes with consular power. We're going to need to organize consular elections for the next year because we need things to be, you know, super stable, really under lock and key, patricians only. The tribunes, however, say, you know what? No, we're going to use our vetoes. And so they stop consular elections from being held. Apparently this is something they can do. And
it seems a little bit too early.
I know. And also, this is where it starts to get really murky. Clearly, I think there is some overlap between the events of 421 and 420. It's really unclear, like, when all of this is going down and how. And that's because the freaking tribunes stopped the consuls from being elected, and therefore I don't have a clear end date here, Dr. D.
This is the year that goes forever.
Yeah, and so instead of having consuls coming in, instead we have an interim. And not just an interrex, we have lots of them.
Oh, yes. We're about to enter a very baffling period of Roman politics.
Weird. So weird.
Because an interrex, as the name would suggest,
yeah,
is somebody who comes between kings.
Exactly, exactly. And, but look, we have heard them use this before.
Yes.
In the Republic. But yeah, the fact that it's still hanging around almost 100 years later, it's like, guys.
As a stopgap solution for when things really go wrong.
You got rid of the kings. You're designing the new system. Be better.
At least give people new titles.
Exactly. Like, Jesus Christ. Like, we've given you 100 years. Like, freshen up the place a bit. But anyway, so there's this whole series of interregas apparently taking place. And even this did not happen smoothly because the tribunes are apparently trying really hard to stop the patricians from meeting at all. So when they have to meet to talk about things...
they start to gather in public and patricians just run at them to disperse the crowd.
In private as well. Like they are just, they seem to be stopping them from having meetings everywhere because they're trying to gather so they can appoint the next interrex because, and we probably should remind our listeners of this, Dr. G, the whole idea of an interrex is that the idea is that elite men each take turns holding the ultimate imperium for short periods of time.
Yes, it's kind of like it's done by lot or it's done by time. It's kind of like there are different systems for measuring it. But the idea is it's rotational and everybody understands the nature of the rotation.
Yeah, it's like a patrician hot potato, basically. And so they are using their veto to stop them from gathering, to stop them from appointing people, to stop them from ordering consular elections. Oh, it's exhausting.
Yeah, I mean, it's very confusing. I'm just overwhelmed by the confusion of it all. I've got no narrative, so I've got nothing to base my response
on. I'm winding it up, don't worry. So eventually we get a guy called Lucius Papirius Magellanus who's made the interrex.
Okay.
Now he decides he's going to have a go at everyone. So he tells off the senators, he tells off the tribunes of the plebs. He's like, hello, you're lucky that the gods have been looking out for Rome because you guys sure as hell haven't been. You're just freaking lucky. I mean, what if they decided once again to call off the truce? Huh? What if the Aquians weren't complete losers, as they seem to be right now for the sake of this narrative? Things could go south really quickly for us, guys. We're not preeminent yet. Okay, what happens in the case of an emergency? What happens if you don't have patricians in charge? Are you mad? No army, no generals to conduct a levy? Oh my God, you all need to compromise. You all need to give in just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. And so...
demonstrate some moderatio, guys.
Oh yeah, no, that's exactly what happens. The Senate agree that the whole military tribunes with consular power thing can happen. And the tribunes allow four quaestors, provided that they are chosen at the will of the people and can be either patrician or plebeian. Yes, that's right.
We're back at square one.
We're back at square one, where they could have been months ago, maybe years ago. Who knows how much time has passed while I've been dealing with this incompetence.
So many dinner parties broken up and for nothing, just to get back to the beginning again.
I know, I know. Now, look, this is one of those episodes in the whole struggle of the orders that definitely some scholars have been like, really? Did this really happen? It also doesn't seem like the tribunes could actually stop the patricians from meeting.
No, I don't think so. That does seem rather suspect at this point in time.
Yeah, but it could be potentially a way of explaining something that really happened, which is a lot of these interregas.
Yes.
Yeah.
Interesting. So that sounds, is that the wrap up of
that's
the,
it. That's
okay.
It. I mean, that's it for 421, maybe part of 4.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So to put things, a different spin on things,
okay.
One of the things I've been doing while I've lacked source material is just to read some scholarship.
Yep.
You know, everybody loves a good time. And one of those books is Drogula's Commanders and Command in the Roman Republic and Early Empire.
Ah.
I'm not interested in the Early Empire at this point, but I'm glad the book covers that as well.
Can I get this person on the show? That's like the second article we've read.
Yeah.
I'm not actually sure.
Well, I'm the first name Fred, so I think... Well, but I wouldn't presume gender.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But Commanders and Command in the Roman Republic and Early Empire, and it's looking at what do we think might have been realistically going on in this very early period. And
nothing.
History was a blank slate. Rome was a tabula rasa. And it only came into being with the Punic Wars. Before then, it didn't exist at all.
There were some huts. That's about all I feel confident saying.
There were some huts.
Yeah.
There definitely were huts. We've got some archaeological evidence for huts, which is great.
Yeah. There were some temples.
There were some temples.
Yeah.
And one of the theories that Jorgula is sort of exploring in this early period is that you've got prominent families
mm-hmm.
and politics operating through prominent families.
Sure.
Which makes sense.
Yeah.
And so the Fabii, going back to them for a minute and their disastrous sort of like private war
that
with
is
they,
going back, yeah.
That's going back a little ways now. Yeah. But seeing that as an example of what might actually be happening, instead of having elections, instead of having formal people coming into positions of power, what you've got is
warlords.
A kind of like, it's warlords and bandits, and people are raising private armies
mm-hmm.
and going around the place to defend their property. So Rome has this sort of feature about it, and we see it later on as well, where they kind of don't ever really get to the spot where they have like a proper sort of like police force or things like that. It's kind of like the onus is on the individual to look after themselves.
Oh, definitely.
And how you go about that is kind of up to you.
Mm-hmm.
And if we take that sort of idea right back into this early period, you've got your land holdings, you've got the people who are dependent on that land, who are loyal to you, you're divided up into tribes, you're a prominent family, you're a tribune because you're a leader of a tribe in some respect, or you've been drawn from a tribe. So we've talked about this idea of where does the name tribune come from, coming out of that tribal system, some kind of leader. And then you've got this idea that we've also got not consuls, but praetors.
Mm.
Praetor being kind of like a default name for a leader as well.
Yeah.
You got people who are like, well, I need to defend my property because we're about to get raided by those guys and I can see them coming over the hill. Who's with me?
Yeah.
And everybody's got a vested interest in the local area to get on board with that because better to defend it together than not. And you got this swilling...
slaughtered the individuals.
Yeah. This swilling mix of people rising to prominence who are able to raise their own armies and that driving the politics in this central meeting area of these tribes, which is these little hills that are getting more and more populous, that becomes Rome.
Yeah.
And this idea, I think, is really useful and interesting for understanding some of this stuff because Livy has to navigate, and Dionysius, whenever I have him, have to navigate this idea that Rome gets rid of the kings and is, in their mind, kind of already a fully fledged republic before it would be really possible for them to have figured out how they're going to do it.
Yes.
And part of what we're seeing is this ongoing process of them trying to figure it out, not really getting it right. Sometimes it's working, sometimes it's not. Sometimes you've got to have an interreges. What does that even mean if you're dealing with a period of like war bands and warlords and roving armies?
I'm down for this idea of the Rome of this period actually being a chaotic mess where
I think it might
haven't figured out what they're doing exactly in place of the kings. I mean, you know, you think about the period that's better documented, like when Rome collapses in the West, that whole idea that, you know, feudalism springs up to take its place because people, as you say, need to defend their local area. And there are some people that are better equipped to be the leaders in that scenario, whether it's because they already have more people that are pledged to them or they have more material wealth of some kind. Like, it's totally clear that that is probably what is happening here. Not necessarily in the sense of, you serf, you pledge yourself to me.
I shall advance you.
Yeah, bow down before me. But in that sense of, I'm the strongest guy in this area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Better to be on my side than against me. You want my side? And you're like, yes, sir. Yes, I am.
And it would explain so much.
I'm not going to burn down your farm. Yet.
Those guys might. If I don't help you.
If you pay me a little bit of cash, I'll make sure that I come back if they ever return.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. It makes complete sense that when you get rid of a system like the kings, that this would be exactly what takes its place.
Yeah, and it might also help explain why we've got these periods where, and because we're in the middle of this period now and it's going to go on for quite some time, where we've got military tribunes with consular power, not consuls.
Mm.
And this is part of like this chaotic time where it's like there is clearly more than a couple of people who are holding imperium and running around with an armed force. And this period of Rome's sort of chaotic coming together and trying to figure out who they are while also facing off against just about everybody else in the region.
Yeah.
Is we're right in the middle of the drama now.
Oh, 100%. I love it. All right. Well, shall we wrap up there, Dr. G?
Let's.
Okay. That means that it's time for the partial pick. Oh, you know, I'm just going to cut that out.
Why? I'm still so sad.
You know, because you're stealing Igor's gig. Have you thought about that? He's in a union.
Wow. Igor, if you're listening, I want you to know that I'm not trying to steal your job.
All right, Dr. G, tell us about the partial pick.
Well, it is time to see if Rome can win 50 golden eagles.
I'm not betting anything on that.
They're up for 10 golden eagles across 5 categories.
All right, give me the categories. What's the first one?
Military clout.
Look, I mean, maybe, I guess the whole Aquian thing is something.
That's a very confused narrative.
Oh, and it's even then, like even Livy's like, look, it's not great.
How many points are you going to give an Avartio?
Look, I mean, it's an Avartio. It's a pity Avartio. I mean, let's be real. It's a patrician pity party. Because they're trying to distract people from the fact that Sempronius really stuffed up. So I feel like I cannot give it more than a 3.
All right, fair. All right, diplomacy. Well, there was some moments of acquiescence that come through when we get 4 quaestors that could be elected. 2 of whom could be plebeian, perhaps.
And there's also the whole, you know, Hortensius and the 4 horsemen of the apocalypse thing.
They do have a moment where they come together and find an accord.
Yes. Damn you, Livy, and your theme of moderatio. So I guess, look, I don't feel like it's much because there was a lot of fighting before that one that you mentioned. And there was a lot of fighting before the one that I mentioned. So I feel like, I don't know, maybe again another 3.
Oh, I feel like a 4.
Okay, fine.
You know, give them 2 each.
Right. Okay, done.
Expansion.
No. It feels like a really long time since we had some fresh territory.
Oh, Rome. When shall you be great?
Yeah.
Never. That's a 0. Okay, the 4th category is virtus.
Look, there's some interesting behavior going on here. I'll give you that. But I don't think any of it qualifies as virtus.
I would say that perhaps the very selfless defense of Sempronius by the 4 tribune of the plebs who served under him under a disastrous campaign and that filial parallel that they make, that that's the commander true. Is akin to their father.
Yeah.
Fascinating stuff. I feel like that's got a bit of weird to us in it.
Okay. I'm not going to give them a lot. Maybe yeah. like a 2.
A 2?
I don't know. It seems like an empty gesture.
Yeah, look.
Hortensius was fake anyway.
Talking you into it, aren't I? but I do think there is some element of virtus there because of that parallel with Pietas. So I don't mind if it's low. I'm not wedded to a number on this one. I don't have a strong feeling one way or the other. But yeah, I think something.
I think it would make a mockery of all virtus. Who threw themselves into the heat of battle
and gained their wounds slaughtered. On the front.
And these guys just said, hey, maybe we'll wear some different clothes. So I feel like a 2 is fair.
He threw on his best black dress and I'm calling that virtue.
Okay. All right. I'm giving him a 2.
And our final category is the citizen score.
Citizens remarkably absent from all this bickering going on, but I feel like it can't be pleasant for them.
Look, they've had some, maybe they've been involved in this Aquian situation.
Well, so they would definitely have to.
That wouldn't have been great, but they did win. So that's,
and easily.
Could have been worse.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But then also, if we've got now 4 quaestors and 2 can be drawn from the plebeian class, that seems like there's the potential for greater representation.
True. Always the potential though, isn't it?
I'm emphasizing the potential. Yeah. I've been reading a little bit of Rome's history and I'm not feeling confident that we're going to see 2 quaestors who are plebeian.
Maybe a 3. Like, you know, I mean, they're not really explicitly mentioned, which makes me think that nothing particularly out of the ordinary is happening, either good or bad.
Mm. All right. I'm happy to go with that.
Okay. That means, Dr. G, that we end up with a grand total of 12 golden eagles for Rome. And that's over 2 years, so that's even more pathetic than it sounds.
Oh, Rome. Well, okay.
I am very excited, though, for you, because if you join me next episode, Dr. G.
Oh boy, I'm very excited. There are things on the horizon. Stay tuned, listeners.
Yeah, I'm just going to say one word. Pestle.
Yes, hold that thought in your mind.
Yeah.
Well, before we go, I'd like to thank all of our patrons who are marvelous and wonderful.
Indeed.
And encourage anybody who enjoys our work to think about supporting us as well. We'd love to have you.
Why not make this a full-time gig so that we can really speed through Rome's history at a much faster pace than we have so far.
But also, if you're fiscally doing it tough, which I totally understand, and you know, podcasts are a fabulous free resource, we'd love to have a review written by you if you enjoy our work, because those reviews actually make our day every time we see them.
They absolutely do. And you can also just tell someone old school style about the show and say, give it a listen.
See what you think.
Exactly, yes.
All right. Well, it has been, as always, an absolute pleasure to chat with you, Dr. Rad.
Agreed, Dr. G. Now, for anyone who wants to know all about our sources for this episode and our credits, please check out our website. That's where we post it all. And our music is by Bettina Joy Dugus.